If I lived in Boston, I'd just go there and eat sandwiches at the desk space.
Just hang out with Sean. Hey, what's up, man?
I've come to eat a sandwich. That's it. I'm leaving now.
He probably let you do that. He's a cool guy.
Probably.
Okay, I'm a sandwich with him.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. I do that just so people know it's not recorded every time in the beginning.
Oh, like it's canned.
You gotta mix it up a little bit.
This is episode 141, and we are here talking
today.
Good
morning.
Good morning.
Actually our normal record time. This is the first time in ages.
And I actually went to bed on time last night and got up at a reasonable hour this morning, so I'm not exhausted at the moment.
Excellent.
That is cool.
I
made the best grits I've ever made in my life.
Oh, I love grits. What'd you do?
Because they have to be dairy free because we have a dairy allergy in the house.
Yeah.
And so I did 1 cup of water, 1 cup of soy creamer, and then I brought that to like not a roiling, but like it's bubbling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then you slowly add a half a cup of grits, and then you stir that for about 20 minutes. You add about a large pinch of salt, and you stir that for about 20 minutes. And then at the end of that, you add two tablespoons of whatever butter. We have like a vegan butter that we use, 2 tablespoons of butter. And you let that melt and then you serve, and it's delicious.
Sweet.
Grit-tastic.
Would it be nerd appropriate to add Matt's Cooking Corner as a segment to this show?
Oh man, I love cooking.
Yeah.
Let us know, listeners, if cooking is something
cooking
that fits
corner.
into your nerdy hobbies and passions, let us know.
Yeah, I'll do some recipes. It'll be great.
Yeah, we'll have to rename everything. Like, these are fucking wampa grits.
Like your Krogan jerky.
Yeah, my Krogan jerky.
Oh, yeah, we did that once. I forgot. Yeah. Ash did his jerky.
Oh, look at that. See, we've already got a segment going
I need to make more of that. Stuff's good.
We've got grits and jerky. This is a southern fucking
we are
food.
Yeehaw. Yeah.
Southern Fried Podcast.
Let's do the rundown.
We're going to start with what we've been up to, and then we're going to talk about the news with Harmonix and what's going on at Irrational Studios and the Guardians of the Galaxy trailer that came out this week. So we'll do our wrap up on the Titanfall beta cuz Matt got a chance to play, and then Ash is going to talk about the Art of Titanfall book, which I hear is amazing. And then in our Naquato, we will ask you, what fictitious activity from a game or film would you like to see turned into a real Olympic sport? Blah, 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 blah.
Olympics.
Olympic sport. Again, I can't read.
It's okay.
That's all
right. So the podcast is once again brought to you by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle. I almost said iKindle. iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/ratedNA, and that helps us out extremely, and that keeps the podcast wheels moving, if you will. So thank you, Audible, and thank you guys for checking out Audible on us.
I started a new audiobook.
What'd you start?
I'm reading this book called The Wind-Up Girl. Have you heard about this?
No.
No.
It's I think I was just sort of browsing around for sci-fi and cyberpunk, things that other people liked, and I came across this book, and I'm kind of having a hard time following it, so I might need someone to explain to me what's going on. But as far as I can tell, it's set in sort of a semi-post-apocalyptic Asia, where pretty much the author gave a foreword to the book at the beginning of the audio recording. He said that he was in China, like when the SARS outbreak started.
Scary.
Yeah. Wow. So he kind of came back from that experience, unscathed, as it were. But he decided to write a book sort of based around those experiences, but set in a more sci-fi kind of universe.
Very cool.
That's cool.
So that's what I'm checking out right now.
I'm trying to get ready to figure out what I'm going to listen to, because we're going to have the 20-hour trek across the country pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
I'm going to put a couple books on the old phone to listen to on the way up, so we'll see what we get.
Good.
Cool.
You've got suggestions.
I just listened to the next Marissa Meyer book, in the Lunar Chronicles trilogy. I just finished it yesterday, which is Scarlet.
Yeah.
So it's sort of a cyberpunk retelling of the story of Little Red Riding Hood, set in a really cool dystopian universe. Absolutely loved it. It was really cool. More action-packed than the first book. Highly recommended. A lot of fun. And I think there's one book out now called Cress, which is the third book. And then she's about to, I guess she's working on the fourth book now. So it's really good. Really well read, too. Makes my drive to work very, very fast. So
nice.
Yeah, I started reading, but not listening to Cinder. So I'm
awesome.
About a quarter of the way in.
Good stuff.
It's good stuff. So, Ash, what have you been up to?
Other than that Lunar Chronicle stuff, Matt and I and our wives and some friends went on a Disney adventure on Wednesday.
Hell yeah.
Excellent.
It's been a long time since I've gone and like done everything there.
Mm-hmm. It was the most efficient Disney trip.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. Like, normally when we go, first of all, for those listeners that are new, we're based out of Orlando, Florida, so we live right down the street from Disney. And so, you know, we go on occasion. Yeah, well, it's about an hour away. I mean, it's a long fucking street, but it's a street.
Yeah.
So we went to Disney, and actually we did like almost everything there is to do there. But it was a good time. I mean, there were a lot of things that I hadn't been on yet, even though I had been there so many times. It's weird. Like, I was telling Matt and my wife that like some of my earliest memories as like a little kid are from that park. Like, I remember being 3 and going with my parents and like, you know, sitting in a certain spot. And then I was like sitting in the exact same spot again, you know, many, many years later. I'm like, oh my God, like I remember sitting here and like looking at that. And then like a bird crapped in my dad's hair. And I remembered it like vividly, you know? So that was kind of cool. I also played the living heck out of the Titanfall beta, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit more today. And it was really sad. I actually, like, I knew the beta was over, but I came home from work and I turned it on, the beta.
And I sat down. Would you try to, like, log into it?
Yeah,
even though
I'm like,
couldn't?
I'm just going to try and see what happens. And it loads up and everything. But it's like, sorry, loser, the beta's over.
You're like, well, I'm just going to spec a couple of my custom codes, I guess.
I think you can still get into the tutorial if you're really desperate and you can run around and,
you
like,
gotta
wall
get your
run.
Fix.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you an important question. Did you guys go to the Carousel of Progress?
I kept pitching it over and over and over again, and no one would go to it with me.
Come on.
Yeah, no,
I know.
There is a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. And it's not shining at the end of your day because you didn't go on the ride.
Ooh.
Every time we were like trying to figure out what ride we were going to do next, I kept saying Carousel of Progress only has a 5-minute wait, and no one would do it.
It is so good. Hey, Can't Talk Podcast, do you guys have Carousel of Progress out in California? I bet you don't.
Take that, nice podcast.
I know. I'm just
nice
kidding.
Nice people who are very supportive of us.
I was riveted by their California Disney tips. Anyway,
So what else have I been doing? Other than that, I haven't really been doing much of anything. So let's move on to Matt. Playing a game that is near and dear to our hearts.
I've been doing a few. I'll get a couple of other things out of the way first, but I did Disney with Ash. That was one thing. It was fun. And then, to promo the old worky work, you can now watch Showtime on TV because it came out on the Roku, the Showtime app.
Sweet, man. Nice. Congratulations.
Right? Yeah. I did very little for that, but hey, it happened and it's a cool thing. So go watch TV and keep my job alive. But then I have been playing the crap out of Dragon Age Origins. I finally picked it back up again, started going through it, and now I'm in love. I sent a text message out to the guys and to Hillary the other day and said, all right, it's official. Like, I'm in love with Dragon Age Origins. So,
what
have you
been
bugging
as?
You for, like, years now? Like, yeah. Come on, man, play it.
Well, but see, all of my hesitance towards the game is right. Like, I love the story. The story is amazing, and by far the reason that I'm playing. Like, the story is fantastic. And the characters are well done. The talking while you're walking around is awesome. Like, everything is just well done around the story and that aspect of it. Fighting is absolutely atrocious.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah.
Every time a fight breaks out, I run around like a maniac just trying to stay alive and, like, you know, trying to... I mean, I have, like, patterns now because I'm a rogue. I've figured out, like, ways to fight without me dying really quickly, but... Mm-hmm. Never fail. Like, Alistair dies in every single fight, no matter what. Stern has started to die in every, or Sten
yeah.
has died in every fight. But I got Shale. I've got the Golem, so
yeah.
She's amazing, and she does not die in every fight.
I think that the combat in the first Dragon Age game was sort of more conducive to a pause and plan PC style.
Yeah.
And I think I found myself doing that, but then every once in a while, when it gets super hectic or something crazy happens right away, I freak out and I hit the right trigger instead of the left trigger, and then I'm wondering why the game didn't stop, and like I get frantic on it, and it doesn't work out.
But I would recommend to you Dragon Age 2 if you make it there in time.
Oh, I'm gonna play them all.
Oh, cool. Yeah, Dragon Age 2. I mean, although some of the fans like didn't like this sort of more real time combat approach, because it's easier to play that game as real time, semi real time combat. You know?
Right.
And so I did play as a rogue in the second one. It was totally awesome.
Yeah, as a fan of rogues, you'll shit yourself with the second game. Rogues are so much fun.
As long as they fix my team AI a little, which is like kind of the way I look at like Mass Effect 1 to 2. You know, like Mass Effect 1, if you go back and play it, the team AI is like, you're like, get down. And they're like, what? And they like get shot in the head like over and over again. And you're like, please just like get out of the way. Like, I'll kill everybody. How's that sound? I will kill everyone. And like in this game, it's more like, Morgan, just kill everybody while I run around and try to backstab them when they're almost dead. And like,
yeah,
like it's not great. It's not terrible. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It feels older. The combat does, as well as the other thing that I told Ash, which has been kind of the reason that I've stopped playing every once in a while, is that it doesn't auto save enough.
Oh, and do you like forget to save?
Yeah, I just, cause I'm, you know, I mean, when's the last time you had forcefully save a game?
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's not really like that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is, which is years old. When I'm like running around doing stuff, like I forget the worst time it happened was, so I went through the whole thing at Red Cliff where you fight for, you kill the demon that's taken over the kid and all that. I did that whole thing. Yeah. And then I like went back to camp and I spec'd up my guys and like bought a bunch of stuff and sold a bunch of stuff. I did like a lot of stuff. And then I went to Denarium and started going through that. I did like a bunch of the side quests there and, hadn't left that city yet, but had started to like figure out what I was going to do next. And then I went to do some like piddly side quest and got killed by, like, it's like one of the things where like one of the revenant like gigantic guys shows up out of the blue.
Yeah.
And just basically team wipes you because there's almost nothing you can do from what I gather.
Right.
Yeah. Revenant or Revan? I'm
They're revenants.
All.
Yeah.
Revenant. Yeah. Yeah. And then so I team wipe and then I'm like, oh, that sucked, but oh well, you know, like, shit happens kind of thing. And then I like resume, you know, like start at last save, and I was all the way back at camp, which was right after Red Cliff happened. And I was like,
yeah,
you've got to be kidding
me.
Like
no!
It didn't save up any of my specs. It didn't save up me like the buying and selling stuff. It lost all of Denarium. It just didn't do it, like as if I never went to the city at all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God. And I literally just turned it off and walked away. I was like, I'll just do it again another time. Like, this
For
is
sure.
ridiculous. So I've been trying to be better about every time I show up somewhere, I just immediately save, like without doing anything else.
Yeah,
I just
save
the moment I walk into a new place. So it's getting there. It reminds me of like when I first started in graphic design a decade ago and like Adobe Photoshop and Illustrator were notorious for crashing like all the time. They just crashed for no reason whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And you'd be like hours into a project. You'd be like hours, like you spent days working on this thing and you'd be like, all right, I think I'm finally happy with it. And then like crash and you open it up and it's like 47 revisions previous to what you were just looking at. And you're like, oh my God, you're so crying. It's terrible. So those two things aside, I'm absolutely loving the game. I'm definitely going to play through the whole series. Like it's
awesome.
It's a pretty awesome world and it's a cool story. And like Ash said, it's basically D&D, you know, on the Xbox, but done better than any D&D game that's been put out. So, but it's been good. And so I'm finally gaming again. I feel like I hadn't been, like, for the past 6 weeks, I feel like I was like, well, I didn't play any games.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Scott?
Yes?
Are you still playing threes?
Oh, yeah. Still playing threes. I topped my high score just this morning, you guys.
There's a more important question, though.
What's that?
Did you top Christina's high score?
Ooh. What's her high score?
I don't know. It's like 11,000 or something.
11,000?
Yeah, I think so.
No, no, you posted a picture of your, like, 3,100, right, or 34? And she was, like, 38, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, I've got 4,000 is my high score.
Oh!
Now. Yeah.
He's in the bar.
Topped it this morning. I got 192, and then I had 296s, and I just couldn't combine them. Because if I would have done that, I could have gotten to whatever that is, 300 and something. 70
whatever
something,
that is.
380-something? Yeah. So
that's
close. So close. Anyways.
So close.
I completed the Sleeping Dogs DLC, which, again, I'm surprised at how enjoyable this game is and the fact that hardly anybody played it, but now it's free. If you would have picked it up during Games with Gold, it was really, really fun to play, and I enjoy the combat mechanic. In the DLC, it was cool because they changed the combat mechanic. If you've ever played Sleeping Dogs or the predecessor's True Crime, you are sort of an undercover person, and you break up these gangs and drug rings and stuff like that. In the DLC, in the second DLC, they actually make you like a beat cop in the game.
Okay.
And so they give you a stun gun. So it changes your fighting mechanics a little bit because you can stun guys and you can even arrest them too instead of knocking them out. And it's just kind of cool the way they put it together.
Oh, cool.
So, that was a great experience. I started playing Remember Me as well. And I'm playing it on PC because I picked it up during Steam sale. And pretty much everything that I read or saw or heard about this game ahead of time, I think is true. So as you might suspect, the environments of this game are beautiful. They put a lot of effort into designing this Neo Paris. There's a bunch of, you know, the artwork is amazing. The colors all pop. I'm playing on PC, so it's all, you know, upscaled to like 1080p. It looks beautiful. And then the problem, of course, the story is pretty compelling too. It's really interesting, this whole thing about losing memories and reconfiguring memories. The problem, I would say one of the central problems is maybe the gameplay or the control of the characters in the game, which is kind of central to a fighting game, if you will. And it just is, it's not very smooth. So it feels rigid at times to move your character and pull off the combos. The other complaint that I heard about this game is that the game is very linear, and while it's not, while making a linear game in itself is not a problem, the game is so beautiful that you feel compelled as the player to explore the environments, but the game doesn't allow you to do that, you know?
Ouch. Yeah.
So if you see a ledge, pretty much there are ledges everywhere, but the only ones that you can grapple to are the ones you're supposed to go to in order to progress through the story.
Okay.
So you can't go, oh, what is that on that building over there? I'm going to try to jump over the railing and get to that other building. No, you can't do that, which is too bad. And then the other thing is that at times the camera is your enemy too. And I feel like in 2014, that's not awesome, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And when you're in combat, the camera sort of is not always where the action is, where it needs to be. I would say almost more importantly, when you're running through the environments, the camera, I would say, is almost too close to your character in order for you to take in the amazing scenery all around you, which is, like, really too bad.
Yeah, it is too bad.
But that being said, I still think the game, what I've played of the game, I think I've played maybe two or three chapters. The game is really fun if you can, you know, get past some minor
but
hiccups.
It's
actually the, I think if you are a PS Plus member, I think that's the free game for the time being, which
maybe
is,
I should
go
grab that.
If you're a PS Plus member, you can pick up Remember Me, I think.
Yeah,
for now.
I should definitely go get that. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, the game is gorgeous. It's really cool, and it's upscaled on the PC. Like, it looks even better. And you're like, how usually environments and narrative are the things that people usually get wrong, and it's not usually the gameplay is the thing that most people get right, and it's just held together poorly with a narrative. But this is almost the opposite, where you're like, man, if this combat was something closer to Batman or Assassin's Creed, this whole game would have been taking it, you know, somewhere from like a C to a B+. You know what I mean? Like,
every game just put the Batman fighting system in their game.
For real.
That'd be amazing. That's a good point. I mean, they take an interesting approach to combat in this game, where they allow you to customize how your combos work. So if you have a combo that's XY, 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 you can choose if those punches and kicks either restore your health, deal extra damage, or do other things. So that's kind of how they approach what they call the combo lab in this game. It has a bunch of great ideas. That's the problem. But anyways, so that's what I've been up to, playing Sleeping Dogs, Remember Me, Threes. I am also sad that the Titanfall beta is gone. But that being the case, you know what else we have to look forward to, you guys?
What?
News.
A new game from Harmonix that is not Fantasia Music Evolved.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this week Harmonix announced a brand new game. It's not Fantasia Music Evolved. It's called Chroma, and it's described as a free-to-play, music-driven, first-person multiplayer shooter for the PC. Can you wrap your mind around that? Music-driven?
Absolutely not. I don't get it. Are you going to shoot music? Is music going to shoot you? Are there abilities that go in sync with different beats?
What was the Ubisoft game that Ubisoft?
Child of Eden?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like that. I think it's more like they have a teaser video that you can see online. It looks very futuristic with neon and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Uh-huh.
But from what I gather, apparently it's going to be, you know, like if you do things on the beat, they work a little better, I suppose. Like,
oh, okay.
Moving and
so
shooting.
So like Parappa the Rapper to the shooter.
What?
I don't know. It's so crazy. It's, you know, they describe it as sort of, I guess they channel some classic arena FPS elements, but they add in their own, you know, their expertise in music driven gameplay. It's really interesting. They pretty much right now they announced the game, they released a teaser video, and then they're doing a closed alpha, so there's registration available for that right now.
That's super exciting. That team is so incredibly creative, and I kind of feel like you know, people have been kind of worried about what's going to happen next with Harmonix because of, like, you know, the death of all the plastic instruments and the fact that everyone kind of moved away from that very quickly. And that was really what they were known for, you know. So,
right.
I think it's good that they're branching out and trying something completely new. I do have a question though. What's going on with Fantasia? Does anybody know?
I've not heard anything. I was thinking about this today as we were looking at this news and thinking about PAX. I'm kind of hoping they have something to show at PAX this year. I'm not really sure.
Well, they showed Fantasia not publicly, but they were promoting the living crap out of Fantasia at PAX Prime.
Mm-hmm. When they had it actually available to play at SDCC as well. But I guess my big question about Fantasia is, you know, the fact that it's a 360 title developed for the old Kinect, and now there's a better, you know, more precise version of the Kinect available.
I thought it was for the Xbox One as well. They're going to release it on both.
Oh, is it? Is that what they said? I mean, yeah. that would make much more sense to release it for the One as well, just because that Kinect on the One is so much better.
Yeah, I think it's going to be for both, for Xbox 360 and Xbox One. Yeah.
That's good.
Mm.
So I think the Xbox One version may be more precise, obviously, than the...
Yeah, yeah.
There should be differences, I think, between the two.
Well, the Chroma news is exciting, though, just because, it, you know, like I said, they need to be making something new and something different. Why do you think that they're going with PC as opposed to going for a console release?
I don't know. I just feel like, you know, maybe it's to capitalize on an already existing market of people that play FPS on PC. They use Twitch to stream their gameplay. You know, there are competitive tournaments. Maybe they're hoping this game turns into something that's played at the professional gaming level, stuff like that. You know, there's a lot of different directions a game like this could go in addition to being something that regular gamers can just consume for fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, true. With the free-to-play model, you can probably reach a much larger market than you know, if free-to-play is the model you're going with, it's probably easier to do that on PC than it is to do it on a console. I mean, that would be my guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they were just trying to see how many, like, game buzzy words they could get into a press title. Free to play music driven first person shooter.
I know. I feel like I added a couple of extra press buzzwords in myself.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah. But I mean, I think the same thing. I think there is a large market out there between Steam and good old games and the, you know, whatever else other stuff of PC players, and maybe they just feel like they've been missing out a little bit on hitting that PC market.
Yeah, so. That's true. I mean, we love those guys and gals over there, and they, like Ash said, they're super creative, so
yeah,
we
great.
Wish them the best.
It's kind of like the one studio, you know, I think I read this in a comment, like, on the Polygon article or something, but it was like, it's like one of a few studios that can just announce, like, whatever they want to announce, and I'm going to be like, yep, sure, I'll try it, you know? Like,
sure. Because yep. You're always interested, because you know that it's creative, yeah. Whatever it is.
Yeah. Exactly.
It'll be interesting.
So let's go from good news to crap news.
Yeah, to not so awesome news. Crappy. Ken Levine, is it Levine? Levine, I believe. Ken Levine announced that they're going to be winding down Irrational Studios to about 15 team members. And then it sounds like it's more like, I'm ready to move on to something else, is kind of the gist that I get from reading about this story, is that he is ready to...
It sounds like Ken Levine is bored.
Maybe. I mean, he just wants to do something different. The news that I've read says that BioShock will continue under Take Two, but with a different team of people working on the game. So I think BioShock 2 was the same way, right? It was not... Ken Levine directly did not work on that project yet. I think it was a different group of people.
Obsidian or something.
What's that?
I think it was Obsidian or something that made BioShock 2.
Yeah. Right. So I think while the BioShock franchise will continue, Ken Levine will start working on something else, which is, you know, the tragic part of this story, of course, is that when the studio had to be scaled down, that basically meant that a lot of people lost their jobs, which is unfortunate.
Fired 100 plus, right? It was 100 plus people.
I didn't see the number. That's wild.
Yes, yeah. It's 100 plus people that are going to get let go. I said to Ash, I'm hoping that they're in, I don't know the details or the guts of it. I'm hoping they're doing it the right way and they're giving everybody a nice little pension package to go. You know what I mean? It's not like the studio is in dire straits and they just need to fire the team to survive. They're just deciding that it's time to wind down, which is fine and totally his prerogative. I just hope that, you know, everybody's getting a good chance to getting a buffer to find something else, if you will, and not just being booted out of their city and, you know, running and hoping their house gets paid for somehow and stuff like that. So.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to jump to conclusions on this, but this information really kind of ticked me off a little bit, just because, like Matt said, it's not like the studio didn't do well. I mean, a lot of people said that, you know, Infinite was, you know, the game of the year. And so the fact that you can go from game of the year to being like, oh, you know, I want to do something else. Let's have all the people that worked for years and years and years to develop this amazing game. Let's let them go. That to me just is, I don't know. It rubs me really the wrong way. I mean, from an outsider's perspective, it seems to me as if he could have taken a small team, gone to work on something else, and maybe, you know, allowed everyone to keep their jobs and work on another project at the same time. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's naive. I don't know. But it really kind of pissed me off. And I have, you know, we follow a lot of people that are in the industry on Twitter, and everyone was really upset about this. There's a lot of people that work for other studios that were like, you know, sick to their stomach over it, because it just shows that that nobody is safe. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's got to be so disconcerting to be someone that's like legitimately working in the industry day in and day out. And then to get let go after your project did so well. It's not like their project flopped. You know what I mean? It's like it kicked so much ass. And then be like, oh, but you're fired anyway. And it's like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, come on. But anyway, so I don't know.
Maybe they... I'm with Ash. And it just shows to me this weird, I don't know. It's hard to know because you don't know what the feelings are. You don't know what the team's been told. You know, it could have been done totally right and everything could be totally okay right now. From the outside looking in and how things got announced, it feels like this sort of sense of entitlement of like, oh, I'll just do whatever I want. I'm Ken Levine. I don't give a shit. Like, here, firing 100 people, going to go ahead and open up a new team and do something small because that's what I feel like doing. And it's like, I'm with Ash. Like, why not just hand over ownership, but why don't you own Irrational and hand over leadership to somebody you feel is really worth it and let the studio keep doing things with their 100 plus team members, you know what I mean? And then sure, take the 15 top guys you want to take over to your little, you know, startup and do a startup. Like, I don't blame him for wanting to do something smaller or new. It just makes no sense in the way that it's being done. It's like, why destroy something that is doing totally fine? Like, there's no problems with Irrational right now, unless there are and we just are completely unaware of that.
Yeah.
But seemingly the studio should be A-OK. You know what I mean? Yep. And just hand over the reins to somebody that you think is worth it and say, hey, I'm going to step down and start some... Like, that's what... I mean, could you imagine if the doctors left BioWare and said, and we're going to close BioWare too?
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we've decided to leave and go do other things, but we don't feel like this game studio should even exist if we're not here. Mm-hmm. You know, like... It's just a weird way to do things that I don't understand.
I really hope this isn't born out of the one major criticism that people gave to BioShock Infinite was the fact that no matter what, it was still a shooter. It had this beautiful story. It had this great narrative. It had a great message. You know, it had a tone really kind of unlike any game that had been out in recent years. It dealt with a lot of like really, you know, true historical crimes, and it was just it was a kind of an intense experience. But then a lot of critics were saying, yeah, but it's still just a shooter, and you have to shoot people in the face in order to progress in the game.
Yeah, I think I think that's underscored by the fact that there's a 1999 mode in the game as well.
Yeah,
you know,
because
that's kind of like where the you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I really hope that that wasn't the motivation for like saying, hey, well, we can still do some work in the BioShock universe with these smaller, intimate, maybe more narrative driven stories. But we don't need anyone to build this big shooter anymore, because now we're just going to make like a Telltale-esque adventure game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, whatever he decides to do next.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see what happens next. It's a real, real huge bummer. It is always positive, though, to see all the outreach. You know, we have. You know, I saw Firehose Games basically just offering desk space up to any of those guys that wanted to work there. I saw all these studios reaching out, being like, hey, here's some jobs. We know doors are open for you guys. And so that's
good.
Yeah,
it was weird. Firehose, it's like they weren't even offering jobs necessarily. They were literally offering desk space. So if you needed a place where you could just go sit down, work on your portfolio, your resume, some independent project, like whatever you want to do, if you just need a place to go to work – they were offering desk space because they had it, which is cool. I mean, that's really great.
Yeah.
We love those guys over there.
If I lived in Boston, I'd just go there and eat sandwiches at the desk space.
Just hang out with Sean. Hey, what's up, man?
I've come to eat a sandwich. That's it. I'm leaving now.
He'd probably let you do that. He's a cool guy.
He probably would.
Just kind of have a sandwich with him, yeah.
Well, you want to move on to some happy news?
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. Let's go.
Guardians of the Galaxy just dropped their first official trailer, which is crazy because the movie's coming out this summer and we haven't really seen too much. I, for one, fucking loved the trailer. I watched it, I don't know, half a dozen times already. And it was one of those trailers that kind of gave me goosebumps. I read the Guardians of the Galaxy, the new Guardians of the Galaxy trades last summer, kind of in preparation for the movie. So I knew, you know, a lot about the characters and everything. And if you haven't seen the trailer for Guardians of the Galaxy, go ahead and check it out. It's pretty awesome. A lot of people are sort of in shock that this property got made into a film at all. It is really shocking because it is like, honestly, it's Marvel's like biggest D team. I mean, they really are. They're like the D teamest of D teams, you know, because it's a cosmic title. I don't know how. I'm sure the new book sold well, but in the old days, no one really cared too much for Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, there was like X-Men and the Avengers and Spider-Man and Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, every other super team, and somewhere at the bottom were the Guardians of the Galaxy. But this looks amazing. It's director James Gunn, who did Slither and what's the movie with Ellen Page and the guy with the wrench?
Super.
Super, yeah, he did Super as well. And and James Gunn comes from a background like working with trauma and stuff, so he has this really like sick sense of humor. He has a real kind of a punk rock mentality to making film, which is really nice to see. And the trailer was awesome. It introduces all the characters. It has a lot of humor in it. It has some good music in it. It looks beautiful. You know, we didn't really get to see too much of the combat and stuff, but I'm getting a good vibe from it. It didn't. Sometimes you see a first trailer and you're like, oh shit, this movie's going to be crap.
Right.
But I kind of feel like just from the trailer that Marvel is probably going to knock this one out of the park as well. Did you guys get a chance to see it?
I have not.
Yeah, I did. I watched that, and they've released like two or three little teasers about each of the characters.
Oh, cool. Which one of those did you watch?
I watched the Rocket Raccoon, the Groot, and I think that's it, those two.
Awesome. So you saw the Vin Diesel as Groot one?
Yeah, they didn't. I mean, it just sounds like it's going to be just him saying, I am Groot, but...
Yeah.
Is it going to be weird to you if he says anything other than I am Groot?
That's all he says in the comic, right? He doesn't really say much other than Groot and maybe some grunts.
He says, I am Groot, Groot, and yeah, like he grunts when he fights.
Yeah.
And then Rocket Raccoon. I think Rocket Raccoon is going to be a runaway hit. I think everybody's going to absolutely love that character. And I think due to the tone of the trailer, you know, like as much comedy as James Gunn is making it seems like, I think people are going to love that little dynamic of Groot and Rocket Raccoon. Mm-hmm. So
awesome.
I thought it was awesome. I didn't know what to expect because I was with you. I'm like, this is a really weird team. We'd talked about it. It's like a really weird team to bring into the movie verse of Marvel.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, kind of perfect because it kind of fits right where they've been doing things. You know, if you think back to the first Iron Man was like fun and funny at parts and action packed. And like, it really wasn't, I mean, that's what the universe has become, but it was unexpected in the sense that no one thought that's what comic book movies were. You know what I mean? Everything was dark and, you know, or twisted in some way, or like done definitely in a, like you could tell the director's voice, and maybe you could tell that it was Favreau. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely this different, all of a sudden Marvel kind of like flipped the script of how comic book movies were going to be, you mm-hmm. know, from there on out. And everybody's trying to play catch up since, but I think it'll fit pretty awesome. And it introduces all these weird cosmic storylines that happen throughout the Marvel universe, including the Avengers and including, you know, even X-Men and Spider-Man. So I don't
ensemble
know. I think
movies are very popular right now too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the weird thing though, is this is an ensemble movie of characters that you've never seen before in your entire
well, that,
life.
Yeah. And there's only one of them that's a human and the rest are crazy looking aliens. So just the amount of CG work alone to have two characters that are entirely, entirely CG. I can't even fathom, like, you know,
I thought Batista as
Drax.
Drax looks amazing.
Doesn't he look great?
He looks awesome. Because I was like, that's going to be a weird. I mean, I know they could find people physically big enough to be Drax, but he's got all those like weird tattoos. And I was like, I don't know how they're going to pull all this off to make it look not cheesy. And it looks amazing, especially when the CG of like his tattoos like shimmering when he's walking and stuff.
Yeah, he looks tough as hell.
He looks awesome. I mean, I just honestly, I think it looks cool. I was unsure what I was going to see, and then I watched it, and I was like, this looks like it'll be a ton of fun, you know?
Yeah, and that scene with Rocket, like, on Groot's back firing the machine gun, I was just like, oh, man, there's your money shot right there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the little kids and everyone would be like, oh, that raccoon is so cool.
I show you guys these videos all the time. There's a YouTube channel called Screen Junkies that does the honest trailers and all these, you know, goofy things.
Yeah.
And they did a Who the Hell Are the Guardians of the Galaxy. And they basically just had two like comic book guys and the host sitting there talking about who Guardians of the Galaxy are and kind of introducing the characters and what the story's about and what they thought of the trailer and stuff. And it's actually done really well. And I would suggest if you don't know anything about Guardians of the Galaxy to give it a shot, because it was pretty cool to see them talk about who these different characters are. But I mean, I don't, Scott, you don't know anything about these guys. What are your feelings on it?
No, I don't. I haven't even watched the trailer yet, but everything you describe sounds amazing. So I'm going to have to go watch
it. It's cool. It's very, like, for you, Scott, it has, like, tonally, it feels a little bit like a Star Wars film.
Cool.
There's a Han Solo kind of character. There's like this very, you know, everything is set in space and there's spaceships and big space battles. And it's not like anything we've really seen from the Marvel Universe yet, so it is pretty cool.
I'm on board.
We were talking about it at work, and he said, I'm just excited to see Burt Macklin in space.
No, right?
Burt Macklin, if you don't watch Parks and Recreation, is this like fake FBI agent that Chris Pratt plays on Parks and Recreation, and it looks exactly like they basically took the tone of Burt Macklin and put it
right?
in space.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So, I love Chris Pratt. He's great. Well, we'll be back in a little bit with some Titanfall, some more Titanfall news, and we'll talk about Titanfall Beta a little bit more and actually review the art book, the Titanfall art of Titanfall by Titan Books.
Let's talk about Titanfall, guys.
All right.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Somebody to chime in.
We didn't actually plan who was going to bring that back, and then we just sat in silence for about 10 seconds.
No, that didn't just happen. No one's going to hear
it
that.
It did happen. Let's be honest with the people. Sometimes we don't know what we're doing.
So, it'll sound like a perfectly smooth transition.
Last time we talked about Titanfall last week, Matt had not sat down with the beta. And then,
correct.
He did come over to my house and play for a while, a couple of hours.
Yeah, camped out.
What were some of your impressions of the Titanfall beta?
You know, it felt right back at home as I did on the PAX floor. Like, it just plays. Like, I am not a COD player or a Battlefield player. Like, I played Battlefield 2 forever ago, and I think I played Modern Warfare 2, but I didn't play online ever with anybody else. I just played the single player. Mm-hmm. And so these kind of games usually elude me. They're usually not really aimed at my wheelhouse, as you would say.
Not in your wheelhouse.
But damn, if this game isn't just like buttery smooth when you sit down with it. It's just, it plays perfectly. Like, it feels right. When you jump in the mechs, you feel like you're in a mech all of a sudden. And, you know, like, I don't get frustrated with it because I think there's enough variance in how you can play. And I think that there's a lot of room for even more variance to not feel frustrated that you spawn and get shot like 3 seconds later. Do you know what I mean? Like, which is what I usually feel like in Call of Duty. It's like I come in and I'm like, yeah, I'm on the, oh, okay. Hey, I'm out. Okay, that's fine. Yep. Okay. Oh, I made it. I'm going to run. And then I run for like 10 seconds and I'm like, and I'm dead. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So this game definitely, you know, I think the sort of free running jetpack aspect of it adds a lot to that.
Yeah.
Because you can get around a lot quicker and kind of evade a lot better than just running in a straight line, which is usually what I feel like I end up doing when I'm playing the other games. You know, waiting for the mechs is like exciting and awesome, but I kind of found that I'm sort of a mech killer. I'm kind of terrible at killing other players and really good at taking down their titans.
Really?
So, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
I was like left and right taking down titans. I don't know why. I think I found the right weapon combination, Ash, I guess.
Yeah,
you put together a couple of good combinations and I forget. One match I had like, how many did I take down? Was it three or four titans?
Three or
titans?
Four, yeah. Well, awesome. I think the thing, not to cut you off, but the thing that they did that was brilliant is, you know, even though you're in a titan, you're by no means invulnerable. In a lot of ways, you're more vulnerable.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
You know, as your Titan, you can only dash with the ones they gave us in the beta, the Atlas. You can only dash twice, so you're not very maneuverable. And all a pilot has to do is get on top of a building and then jump on top of you. And unless you're spec'd the right way, it's really hard to get that pilot off your back without getting out of your mech and shooting them off your back.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a pilot that plays well can, you know, take down a Titan very, very quickly. So it is this kind of cat and mouse game. But at the same time, like you always feel powerful, which is what I think Matt was saying. Like, there's never a moment in the game where you're like, oh, I fucking suck at this.
Yeah.
Because even if you do suck, you can just go kill minions and get a shitload of points and like kill stuff.
You kind of laugh. Like, it's fun when you suck, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I would get taken down sometimes by some really badass players and I would watch how it happened, and I was just, oh my god, there's one guy camping on a roof that was just slaughtering every like non-Titan player that was running around, and for good reason. Like, he was very good at what he was doing, and it wasn't even in an annoying way, because then it became a challenge to like get up to the roof to get to him, and I did, I think, at one point, and then he managed to still get me like at the last second, but it made him leave the area. Like, I at least pushed him out, you know? But it was fun. The thing that I would say I'm like waiting for that I want is big maps. Like, I could see having a gigantic map and that being really fun.
No, I agree.
But otherwise, I mean, did you guys get any new thoughts? I played, what was the other mode I played that was pretty awesome?
You played
like Last Man Standing.
Yeah, you played Last Titan Standing. So you actually, and this is something I don't think we talked about, but one of the modes in the game is every player spawns in a Titan. And you can spec your Titan, obviously, any way that you want, but you only get one life. You have two teams of Titans facing off against each other, and you know, whichever team has the last Titan standing is the winner. So it was a lot of it has a very like hardcore war mode kind of vibe to it, which is great.
But it was fun. But what I found in that mode more than the free for all, which maybe makes sense by me just calling it a free for all, was that my team played way more tactically. Like, we would group up, like pair out and go out to the field, you know, like hunting the other Titans essentially and trying to take them out. And it was less like just running around like a chicken with its head cut off trying to kill things than
it was. A lot more strategy. Absolutely.
I
think when you have only one life, you're like, oh man, I better make this last. So everyone is very defensive, you know, you don't run off by yourself. You kind of stick to cover and try and stick with the pack.
Did you guys see the Penny Arcade from Wednesday?
No.
No, not yet.
Titanfall. It was like one of the players sitting there, and he's like, hey, I'm going to need another Titan. And he's like, what? I just sent you a Titan like 20 seconds ago. And he's like, yeah, that one's gone. I'm going to need another one. And he's like, what? Are you kidding me? You know how much these things cost? And then there's like a panel of space, and he's like, I don't know, 100, 150? He's like, you are so wrong. I can't even tell you.
Good times. We're just a few short weeks away.
We
I know. I'm excited. Awesome. The game is awesome. Definitely recommend. I think I'm testament that it's recommended to anyone and not just the hardcore kind of Twitch shooter. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty badass.
I can't wait.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit more about Titanfall, Ash.
We got a book to check out from Titan Books, and it's actually The Art of Titanfall. And we're actually not at liberty to talk about some of the content inside because it does contain some spoilers about the game. But if you'd like to pick up your own copy, I can tell you some vague information about the Art of Titanfall book. First of all, the book is absolutely massive. There's hundreds of pages of art from all the different artists on the team. And the cool thing about the Respawn team is it's very small. There's I think about 75 or less people on the entire team at Respawn right now. So they are they still consider themselves to be a small indie studio. So they don't have a ton of artists. So there's definitely this uniform feel and look to a lot of the art. You get to see a lot of the concept art and how the Titan was developed from the beginning all the way up to the end. So it did change in size and scale as the development kind of progressed. And now that they actually started much larger, and now they're about 24 feet in height. You get to look at the different Titan models and kind of the inspiration for those different Titan models, which is really cool. Yes, there's different Titan models. I can reveal this. There are monsters in the game.
What?
Yes, there are monsters in the game that are ambient creatures on some of the maps that are hostile. So some maps actually have different varieties of creatures. Some of them fly. Some of them are on land.
Oh my.
Some of them are large. Some of them are small. But that has been kind of revealed / leaked now. And so you get to see some of the monster designs too. All of the maps are available to check out, and the inspiration for the maps and some of the ambient events that occur in those maps. So one of the things about Titanfall that's pretty cool is that we've been talking about this hybrid story / multiplayer experience. And how it seems like they're incorporating those two elements together is they're having big events occur in the maps. So for instance, we talked last week about how, one of the events in multiplayer is just getting to the dropship on time and evacuating. Well, there may be other events similar to that are different in the story multiplayer mode.
Sounds awesome.
So things will be happening. Kind of akin to in the latest Battlefield, how during one scene a giant ship crashes on the island and then creates a new spawn point. Something like that may indeed happen in Titanfall.
Cool.
You can check out some of the guns. Some of the guns that were not in the beta are in this art book, and you get to see different iterations of those guns and kind of the inspiration also for those guns. Pretty much, it's just gorgeous. Each page is it looks like it could be a photograph or an art piece that you'd kind of want to cut out and frame. It's available on the 25th of February from Titan Books. You'll be able to get it on Amazon.com. And from what I understand, it is a different art book than the one that's included with the collector's edition.
What?
So if you get the collector's edition from Respawn, it's going to be a different art book. I don't know. Wow. There might be some pieces inside that are the same, but the book itself is actually a different art book. So I can't recommend it enough if you're a fan of the universe and a fan of perhaps, why they did what they did. And if you want to know things a couple weeks early, before it's all leaked.
Interesting.
Yeah, definitely go check it out and pick it up. It's pretty awesome.
Cool.
That's cool. Yeah. Nothing wrong with a good art book.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our Naquato about our fake Olympic sports.
Yeah.
And you're listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com.
Hey, everyone. That's what we did last week, right?
Yeah.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
So in our Naquato this week, we asked, what fictitious activity from a game or film would you like to see turned into a real Olympic sport? Oh my God, you posted that picture in here too. Since the Olympics are going on right now, I thought it'd be funny to imagine some game and film things as Olympic sports. And our Naquato responses begin this week with Mr. Robert Freemring, Mr. Slick, And he says, real life Mario Party would be great to see as real Olympics. Drinking rules still may apply. I concur. Did you guys ever play Mario Party back in the day? I know Matt and I did.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you know I did.
Yeah.
Once or twice. I was never a Mario Party guy.
Yeah.
We used to have
when you get the right group of people adventures together, those games get way out of hand really fast.
Yeah.
The next is Dean Morrison, who is at Dean Morrison on Twitter. And he says, Final Fantasy X Blitzball. Holy shit. Did you guys ever play Final Fantasy X?
I think our friend Adam did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I played it. I loved it. It was great. But Blitzball was something they kind of forced you to do. And you had to play. It was like its own real, fully realized sport with like a full season and everything. So midway through this epic RPG, they're like, now play this fucking game. And you're just like, what? Okay. And then I ended up actually really enjoying Blitzball. But like in the beginning, I was like, are you kidding me? Like I have to learn how to play this like fictitious Final Fantasy sport. But it ends up being a pretty important part of the game.
That sounds about right. Par for the course.
Justin Banks at Midtown 583, who needs to tell us if he did finally cut the cord. We were having a Facebook conversation about whether he was going to ditch cable or not. Says hoverboarding across the pond a la Back to the Future 2.
Really quick about Justin Banks. You know, Matt, a couple of weeks ago on Facebook, you did one of those quizzes that says like which Facebook friend are you like most compatible with to like be a mate? And you did it jokingly with like a male because you were a heterosexual.
I got my buddy Matt Gersting.
Yeah. Well, I got Justin Banks.
Awesome.
So Justin, you and I, you know, maybe we should go out sometime.
It's amazing.
Those boards don't go on water unless you have power.
That's a great biff.
Thanks. So Jazzmore at Jazzmore says, sewer surfing from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles video game. That reminds me of, you remember those really difficult sequences from Battletoads?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Fuck that game.
That sewer surfing was near impossible. I hated that level.
Yeah but in the Ninja Turtles game is a little better because I think it was
It was doable.
Part of that four-player beat-em-up arcade combat.
Yeah.
But, yeah, fuck Battletoads
was like the American Mega Man or something. It was ridiculous. You could barely get through two or three levels of it.
You could beat up your friends too in that game. That was terrible.
I messaged Jazzmore back. Shell shock. You guys remember that big yell shell shock?
Yes. Oh yeah.
Echap33, Eric. Hey Eric. He says the fighting program. I know kung fu combined with the jump program from the Matrix. Virtual Olympics. That would be so good. Yeah. I love that idea.
Sorry, that's awesome. I like that.
The next one is Richard Ingham at Rzaft says Biote Ball from Mass Effect 3, the Citadel.
Oh, yeah, the Citadel. When you go to the arcade, there's Biote Ball.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Right. Awesome. Okay, Natalie at StumpyNet says lightsaber fighting.
Right.
Obviously. Those matches would be really short, though, especially when someone got nicked, you know?
Did you guys see what I messaged her back?
No.
No.
I was like, you do realize that people would die a lot, right? Like, there's no way you can't just wound. So I guess you could just take a limb off, but it'd be a very deadly sport.
Matt, do you have an answer to this question?
No, but I want to steal this next one.
Okay,
go ahead. Steal it.
Aaron Davila.
Yeah,
Aaron Davila.
Sounds good.
Says Calvin Ball, team up with your favorite stuffed animal, don your masks, and go nuts. Calvin Ball is the best game ever created, and absolutely should be an Olympic sport.
That'd be awesome. I'm assuming is that a reference to Calvin and Hobbes?
Yeah. It was this basically no rules game called Calvin Ball, where they would yell rules at each other while they were playing.
Yeah, I was going to say they'd constantly make up the rules and
Calvin would be running, and he'd be like, he would just scream a rule out, like, you know, first one over to the tree gets a point, and then would just like run to like be like almost at the tree, and then. Like Hobbs would run up and tackle him from behind, and then there'd be like a new rule yelled out while they were doing that, and it was just always ridiculous.
Here's a fun fact for our newer listeners. Matt is a Calvin and Hobbes super fan.
He is.
Indeed. I am.
Yes.
I read it growing up, religiously. Mm-hmm. I saved the very last comic ever printed. I have the big collector's edition with that put inside of it, so that I'll have it forever. It's amazing. It should teach everyone the life lessons they need to learn. It's like way ahead of its time.
Very warm. I believe it's a good story.
I got the documentary. I kickstarted a documentary on it, and the documentary was okay. It was neat to see. They actually went and shot it like in his hometown. They went to like where he, and it was neat to see some of the scenery that he ended up using in the comic. Like the comic is like straight out of his hometown.
It's that's cool.
Tiny town in Indiana, maybe, or it's like the Midwest somewhere. But it's really cool. It was a neat little insight into who he was as a person, because he's generally very closed off and very you kind of stick to his guns about what mm-hmm. Calvin is and is not. That's why you never see any. Like, if you ever buy anything with Calvin on it, it's not from I almost said Roger Waters. Good Lord.
Like when he's peeing on a Chevy logo or something?
Yeah. That is not real. Also, for you new listeners, I'm terrible with names and forget them all the time.
All right.
Bill Watterson. Jeez.
There you go. So.
Yes.
Okay.
Anyways, let's move on. But that's so, my stolen answer.
I'll say mine
very
quickly.
I'm going to share my answer.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead, Ash.
Mine is Mutant League Football, the whole thing.
Yes.
That needs to be real. Because I think it would make football more enjoyable.
Okay.
They have giant mutants, and yeah. Even though football is not an Olympic sport, it should be Mutant League Football.
I like it. Fair enough.
Okay.
Alex at AlexN7 says, Quidditch, obviously. Also, Blitzball from Final Fantasy X. My question would be, is it the one that they play in the movie, or the Quidditch that, you know, they play on college campuses where kids just run around on – what? You groaned?
I did, because I used to run a Harry Potter club at work, and they tried to set up their own Quidditch match, and it was, you know.
But am I wrong?
There's the teenagers shouldn't run around with sticks between their legs.
I mean, there are rules that govern this sport in the meat space in the real world, right?
Yeah, there are. There's actually official rules for Quidditch.
This could happen.
It's very. I mean, just no. It shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen.
Amanda at Fluid Fire says, lightsaber dueling in Summer Olympics, of course.
Obviously, Summer Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Obviously.
And then, these are the droids you're looking for, Canada responded with. But wouldn't it be awesome in the Winter Olympics? Hoth, right?
That for would sure. be.
Yeah. It could work in both.
True.
Might be more compelling in the snow with the backdrop.
Ash would do this next one. Oklahoma Broughton says, I'd like to see the leap of faith from Assassin's Creed replace the high dive.
Yeah, fuck that.
Yeah.
Ash, you don't want to just get like 20 stories up and dive into a pile of hay.
No. Do you guys remember that game Froggy everyone used to play in Orlando?
No. What's Funky. That?
Froggy was like this game that all the dumb punk kids used to play, where you'd like call out a move and then like do something terrible. So you go like burglar mask, and then you'd like pull each other's faces back, or like.
I think this is a game that you guys did to each other, and not necessarily a widespread game. That was
I don't know. I think it was pretty widespread. But one of the moves in Froggy was Oklahoma Breakdown, which is what I thought this said, and I got very excited. I'm not at liberty to say what an Oklahoma Breakdown is, because it's a very it's a very X-rated Froggy move.
But, wow.
But, yeah, I think we should bring that back.
Froggy does not have any internet definitions that meet your definitions of Froggy, sir.
I know. Well, it's a small
– Oh.
There's only like 10 of us that played it.
There we go.
Oh, okay.
But now that we have a global reach.
I love how you included the whole city in it. Like, remember that game we all used to play in Orlando?
Froggy? People remember Froggy? Man, there's some good moves.
Oh, boy.
So, Scott, you never gave an answer, right?
I think when I was helping to formulate this question, I gave a made-up answer that I still like. And I just said that we could replace the curling stones with Elcor and just put them on their backs and push them down the...
Like the cat curling that
oh,
I...
Oh, cat curling,
that, right?
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen cat curling yet, go ahead. We'll wait.
Curling is amazing.
Hold on, you guys.
You also said pyramid is another thing you said.
Yeah, I said pyramid from Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar, which is a game I still don't get.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I figured if they just did it in the Olympics and people still didn't understand it and they awarded medals at the end, people would go, yeah, okay, sure. That was cool.
Awesome.
Cool. So, well, I think we're done.
We are.
That's it. So this has been
another tight five, guys. We're really pulling these off. Lately.
We are.
Yeah.
Quickly. This is episode 141 of the Rated NA podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in. We really appreciate it. You guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. If you want to email us, you can email us directly. That is Matt, Scott, Ash, or Hillary with one L at nerdappropriate.com. If you want to find us on Facebook, that's /nerdappropriate. And we do have some fun stuff coming up in the upcoming weeks. We will be covering PAX and MegaCon and all sorts of other crap coming up. So tune in, and we appreciate it. Later.
See ya.
Do yourself a favor and Google cat sticking selfies. We'll be right back.
I personally hope that there would be a Dance Central 4 sometime in this console generation, but that's just me.
You want to dance.
I want to dance.
You just got to dance.
I just got to dance.
You got to get it out.